Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. So, Camille, what do you say we just go ahead and hit the ground running?
Yeah, let's make an introduction.
Yeah.
Greetings. My name's Napoleon Williams III.
Napoleon is a super outgoing guy we met while reporting this episode, and he's been this way since he was a kid.
So, I was very talkative. You know, I was very engaging. You know, I didn't sit still. You know, when it was time to do a certain group activity, I may not participate the way the teacher outlined for me to participate.
Napoleon says his teachers, well, they didn't really appreciate that very much. And even before he started grade school, Napoleon remembers being separated from the rest of the class.
I began being segregated in the school setting as early as kindergarten. But I actually have a few memories of being in preschool. I was not even in the regular school yet, you know, K-12 school yet. I was actually in preschool. I remember being placed in a corner. I remember being told on. My teacher's telling my mom when she picks me up that Napoleon did X, Y, and Z, you know, and my mom being upset with me. And at that time, I didn't realize and understand what was happening.
And what was happening, he says, would change his life. Napoleon, the outgoing kid who didn't care for sitting in his seat all the time, started getting into big trouble. He started getting suspended.
And so that continued throughout my school experience. So we're talking first grade, second grade, third grade. I mean, if you were to talk to my mom, oh my God, she would say to you that that boy kept me out of work. You know, I kept having to take off work to either take him back to school or attend a hearing to see if we can get him back in school, so on and so forth. So by the time I was in fourth grade, that was well internalized for me by then. By that time, my understanding of myself was that I was a bad kid.
All right, we need to step in and explain something.
Right, because just the slightest glance at suspension data reveals something painfully obvious. That label, bad kid, goes to black children far more often than white kids.
And on top of that, kids are getting that label as early as kindergarten.
Right, so as cool of a guy as Napoleon is...
And he is a cool guy.
Right. This is why we wanted you to meet him.
Because what you can't see in the data is how suspensions shape the lives of individual students and their families. So, on this episode, stories about what it means to be black and earn the label bad kid.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems and the people they touch.
I'm Camille Stanley.
And I'm Tim Lloyd, and from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
So let's get back to Napoleon's story. Remember, he started getting suspended in kindergarten, and by the fourth grade or so, being the bad kid had become part of his identity. And then came middle school.
By the seventh or eighth grade, oh, I was living it. I mean, I was living it. So the suspensions and expulsions and times at juvie were validated.
I want to cut in here for a moment and just notice that Napoleon brought up the fact that he wasn't just getting in trouble at school. He was getting in trouble with the law. Now, Napoleon's story represents a larger issue. This is what's often called the school-to-prison pipeline. So just for example, there was a famous study by the Public Policy Research Institute. It's been cited by the White House, Department of Education, Department of Justice, received tons and tons of news coverage.
Anyways, here is what the researchers did. They followed nearly 1 million students in Texas for 6 years. They had individual records for each and every one of those kids. And what they found was that a student who was suspended or expelled for bad behavior that isn't necessarily violent was nearly 3 times as likely to be in contact with the juvenile justice system the following year.
Which gets us back to Napoleon. To recap, he was suspended for little stuff in grade school, then he got into trouble for what he says were some legitimately bad things in middle school. But by high school,
I discovered football, and that kept me out of a lot of trouble. And I had several older gentlemen, my coaches, that were very firm in outlining expectations and feeding and your soul and you're giving you an opportunity to explore your talents and things. So it was very helpful. So it got me through high school. But that bad kid was still there, and many times I ran up against challenges even during that time when I had this great support system that I reverted back to some of that behavior, and it ended me up ultimately in prison.
What did you end up in prison for?
So a multiplicity of reasons. I'm what you call a habitual offender. And so several of my crimes involve drugs and guns and assaults and violent behavior. Where I did some serious self-inventory and was redeemed and
this
was
is
able
why you
to,
were in prison?
Absolutely. Going down that road really highlighted to me the need for me to take a serious look at the choices that I was making.
This is just the beginning of Napoleon's story, and we'll get to the second half a little later in the show. But we wanted to bring you a more recent example, like Shanna Holloman, a mother of four. All of her kids are in the Rittner School District.
Which, by the way, is one of the very few districts in the St. Louis area that's actually racially diverse.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons Shanna moved there. So we caught up with her while she was sitting on her front porch, waiting for her kids to come home from school.
So a little background on Shanna. She has a super busy life in between school activities and her job working the night shift on a GM assembly line. But even when things get stressful, and they do, she tries to keep her cool, especially in front of her kids.
One thing I don't do is curse. That I don't. I can say that proudly. If I do it, it's not in front of the kids. You know, sometimes I'm out with my friends casually here and there, but that's something I generally don't do. I didn't grow up in a home where my parents cursed, so it's just kind of like I don't do that either.
And there's a reason Shanna is stressing this point about not swearing, because last fall she got some disturbing news about her second to youngest daughter, Aaliyah. Aaliyah had just started kindergarten, and she was getting in trouble for swearing in class.
The first time she got suspended, I want to say it was maybe within the first month of school starting. And I'm like, wow, how can you don't even know the kids yet. What's she doing that horrible to where you're going to suspend her? So it was for things like disruptive behavior. So I asked, what is she doing? And it was the interesting part to me is that she was displaying behaviors that she has never displayed nowhere else. It said she hit a teacher one time.
Wait, she was in first grade?
Kindergarten.
And they were worried about a kindergartner hitting a teacher?
Yes, this is the story. The story is that Aaliyah was on the playground. You know, on the playground, they have like the little, what's the little, I don't know what it's called, but something they can pick up just on the playground, like little, I'm trying to think, you know what it is. You know what it is. I can't find the proper word. Anyway, on the playground, she was picking up, just throwing it. So they said she was throwing it at a teacher. They asked Aaliyah to stop. And they said she kept throwing it. But it was something that can't hurt you. It was like, maybe it was mulch. I don't know. But it was something like that, who clearly can't hear you. So they said the teacher went over there, grabbed her hand. It was like, Aaliyah, stop. Then they said Aaliyah proceeded to hit the teacher like 6 or 7 times in a row. So I said, you just sat there and let her hit you 7 times in a row and you didn't tell her stop, you didn't say anything. But this is like after maybe a month of being there, a month and a half, and they were trying to have me take her out to school was what I felt they wanted me to do, but I didn't. Some days getting her folder or her bag last year, I'd just be like, oh. What long note do they have today? You know, what are they going to say negative today about her? You know, it was just like, and I just feel like they painted this picture of Aaliyah that's not Aaliyah.
At this point, Shanna thought she was losing her mind. She knows the transition to kindergarten isn't always easy for kids, but there's something else you need to know about Aaliyah. She was diagnosed with a learning disability that stemmed from her premature birth.
And because of that, Shanna and school officials had drafted something that's called an individual education plan for Aaliyah. This is what people call an IEP. It spelled out stuff like how teachers should interact with Aaliyah and how much individual attention she should get. But Shanna says it became obvious the school wasn't following that plan.
So my thing was like, what are they doing to my child? Is she being provoked to act like this? Like, that's crazy. She doesn't act like that. I mean, it could be something subtle like, every kid gets 2 pieces of candy, she gets 1. You know what I'm saying? Like little stuff like that to where it's not really nothing wrong, but we're going to just give you 1. You know, or did you shove her plate to her? I mean, you know, I'm thinking in my brain, I'm like, what are they doing to my daughter? It's how I felt. So I'm like, I was scared to send her to school sometimes. I'm like, Lord, let me just pray. Hope you have a good day. I'm like, Aaliyah, and I'm talking to her. Hey, Aaliyah, you know, the right thing to do if you have trouble at school, you come home, you tell mommy. You don't have to yell at the teacher. You tell me, mommy, go talk to them. I'm having these conversations with her every day. I'm like, well, hey, what happened? I'm talking to her, not trying to say, hey, what they do to you. I never said that because I don't want to put that thought in her head. So I'm trying to talk to her and ask her in different settings and different things. Hey, what's going on? Yes, it was stressful. So I have a job 8 hours that I have to do. I have a family. you know, I can't. And it got to the point I was so involved with Aaliyah that my older two kids, I'm thank God I have great kids, you know, they're, but my oldest, my middle schooler needed a little help tutoring. I was so focused there, I lost track of that. You know what I'm saying? It was just, because it consumed so much of my energy, I couldn't focus on what they needed.
Janet says she pleaded with the school to put her daughter in a smaller class, but was told there wasn't one. Eventually, she wrote a long email to an assistant superintendent in Rittner. That finally got results.
Sometimes I do reverse psychology, or, you know, try to ask the right question to get the answer that I need to confirm that if you did or didn't do something. I got kids, I know how that works. So I asked her one day, I'm like, well, hey, what exactly are you doing, you know, with the Leah IEP? And she gave me an answer. What she said was not what her IEP said.
And Shanna thought the proper way to handle all of these issues was to go to school staff and voice her concern.
It got a little better. But I believe, in my opinion, I think the damage was already done. And I think it was more, for me, I always say this, when I was going to school, I can feel the tension. So imagine what a six-year-old feels, you know what I'm saying? Just tension, as if like, hey, yeah, that's Aaliyah's mom. We may speak to her today, we may not, as if like, hey, you ratted us out, you told on us, so now I have to be, I'm forced to do my job. Kind of, if you see what I'm saying, it's kind of how I felt.
Did you feel like at any point that the race of your daughter got involved in how teachers were perceiving her behavior?
Yes, but I didn't want to say that on the radio, but yes, I do feel that way. I felt that they looked at me, because I had just had my one-year-old daughter as well. So when I walk, well, not just you, some months old, so I'll walk Aaliyah to school, because it's really, Marvin is like really down the street. So I'll take the stroller, walk her to school. That's like my exercise. So we all walking, you know, I could have drove her, but I just walked because I wanted to walk. It was nice. But I felt that, I guess you see me walking, you got a baby in the stroller. I felt I was stereotyped. The young black mom, no daddy in the house. They don't know my story. They don't know. Yes, I do feel like I was, I do. I felt like it was about race, and it's just my opinion. At first, I didn't so much feel that way, but as time went on and certain things was to happen, yeah, I felt that. And that's another thing, when I say the tension going into the school, just like, yeah, hear that little black lady. You know, and that, Lord, please forgive me. I don't mean it like that, but that's, they wasn't right. Should nobody have to deal with that? And nobody shouldn't have to deal with that. And I just never thought, because I'm a person that just try to look out for everybody, you know what I'm saying? For a person. And I'm like, me, I'm dealing with this, really, why? Why, what did I do to anybody? Nothing. I've done everything you asked. They say have a copy of the IEP when school started. I did that. They say go, I went and talked, I went and advocated, I went and asked, but just to be brushed and treated just like you don't care? How? What makes my child different from the next child that has a learning disability? What makes her any different? It's nothing, no different. And it's not right. And schools need, they shouldn't be putting, if you are there to teach a child and train them, it shouldn't matter. That's your goal. Whatever child is, it shouldn't matter. And parents shouldn't have to deal with it.
Shanna says it wasn't until an assistant superintendent stepped in that things started to improve. And so far, Aaliyah is doing a lot better this year. She's going to a new school in the same district. But her suspensions last year rippled out into other parts of the family's life.
Remember, we told you that Shanna works nights. Well, that's a new job she took this year, all because she was worried that she may need to be available during the day to deal with school officials.
Do you ever get worried that, well, maybe she's going to wear around this label as like a bad kid?
Yes. I worry about that now. It was the assistant superintendent actually had, they put a charge on Aaliyah, assault. They said the story I gave you.
I'm sorry, they assault. I just want to make sure I have this right. They said that a kindergartner assaulted a teacher.
The story I gave you, as far as her hitting.
She's a small.
Aaliyah is about this big. When you see her, people think she's like four. That's how small and little she is. And they say, oh, she assaulted a teacher. Assault was the charge that they tried to get my daughter. And I was like, no.
Shanna says the assault charge eventually was removed from Aaliyah's file. But she says there were many more times when she thought it would just be easier to give up.
everybody kept saying, Shanna, no, you can't. If you give up, then they just gonna push the next person to give up. You know what I'm saying? I know it's hard, I know it's this, but you can't. You have to be a voice for parents who don't know. You know what I'm saying? You go through this, you get results. So now you are in a position where you can help another family who don't know. I didn't know. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time a lot of times to where I knew what to do and how to handle situations. That was it. But it's crazy. You get tired. I wanted to give up and say, forget it. We'll just move. I sell my house. Don't care. Sell my house. We'll go back to an apartment. That's just how bad it was. I didn't care. Or I'll use somebody else's address, send it to a different school. You know, that's how bad it got. I didn't want to deal with it no more. But I just did. I'm thankful that I did, because now we're in a better place this year. However, I feel like, who's to say years down the line, it may or may not come up again. It depends on the school, the teacher. You never know. I don't know. Just that's the scary part. This year, we're in a good place. Great. Who's to say next year things won't change to where I'm not in a good place and I'm back once again, back around the drawing board, fighting again, advocating again for my daughter because they're not giving her the help she needs. Who's to say that? It's just one of those, it's scary. You don't know.
So like we've told you before, we've been digging into the numbers on suspensions in Missouri. And the data show Shanna's story isn't out of the ordinary. Missouri, like almost everywhere else in the nation, has grappled with long-standing racial disparities in school discipline.
Here's the big picture number. Black students make up just 16% of the public school population in Missouri.
Yet last year, they received 40% of all suspensions. And that disparity has remained unchanged in recent years.
So we helped put together a forum recently with the 9 Network, our local PBS station in town, on this very topic, racial disparities in student suspensions. And one of our panelists, Luz Maria Enriquez, an attorney with Legal Services of Eastern Missouri, says part of what's driving that disparity is discretion. Luz says she sees a bunch of it when it comes to how discipline is handed out.
Well, one of the major issues that I see and that I see pretty frequently is really that disproportionate consequence for minor infractions. So, for example, we will have students who have uniform violations or who have tardiness issues who are suspended for those violations, but nothing has been tried prior to the suspension, so they are automatically put out of school for, it could be as short as one day, but we have seen extremes where they're put out of school as long as 10 days.
What Luz is saying also echoes points in that big study we talked about earlier, the one from Texas. There was this big finding that Black students were 31% more likely to face a discretionary action.
Which is kind of like what high schooler Carl Von Blackman was telling us when we met up with him just a couple of weeks ago.
We should tell you a little bit more about him. We met him at a community center he goes to every day after school.
He's a stocky, soft-spoken 17-year-old who would rather write stories than watch TV. Carl Von goes to school at Lift for Life Academy, a charter school in South St. Louis where the student body is almost entirely Black.
He dreams of becoming a filmmaker, a journalist, a photographer, really anything in the liberal arts.
I love school. Except for math, I do not like math at all. But, like, I honestly feel like it really does get me prepared for some things that happens in life. And that's the only way I'm going to become somebody and make it somewhere.
So Carl Von admits that sometimes he slips up. He can get chatty in the classroom, he puts his head down, and sometimes he talks back to a teacher. For Carl Von, these seemingly small transgressions have often come with big consequences. In fact, when we met up with Carl Von, he had just come off a week-long suspension.
I was suspended for cursing. I said the A word.
How many days were you suspended?
I was suspended for a whole week.
Carl Von says this isn't the only time he's gotten kicked out of high school over the past 4 years for similar offenses.
How many days do you think you've missed? You said you've been suspended 20 times.
40 plus 5, 45 days.
So you've missed almost a month of, or more, way over a month of school, like a month and a half of school you've missed for what teachers say is disrespectful behavior or maybe saying a word you shouldn't have said in school.
Yeah.
Does that seem fair?
I feel like on some occasions you do have to like get in trouble for some things, but I don't think that going straight to suspension should be the case for everybody. Like disrespect, it's like, I don't feel like that's something that you should get suspended on, because disrespect to one person could mean something totally different to another person. Cause like I honestly don't feel like I'd be disrespectful. I just feel like I'm voicing my opinion and being myself, but they take it as being disrespect. So I feel like I'm basically getting suspended for being myself. I basically have to stay after school for the next 4 weeks to get caught back up on all my work. I just feel like it's gonna hold me back a lot. I'm already like, I wouldn't say I'm struggling, but I know that this year is like real important, and like it just makes me feel like I'm not gonna finish it off good. Like I'm not, it's not gonna end like I want it to, just from this one setback.
What?
How do you want it to end?
I just wanna graduate with at least a 3.5, but like, me missing like so much school, my GPA is getting lower, and like I have to try to catch up on all my schoolwork, plus I have to work, and like it's just a lot.
Did it make you change your behavior?
No, because that's just the way I am. And I was told by my granny, never let anyone change the person that you are. I guess I'm not good enough for me to like voice my opinions. Like I'm like not on the level for me to speak my mind. And it's depressing sometimes. Like if you get suspended for a certain amount of time, you just like get unbothered by it, and you just start to get upset, more upset than anything. I think they just trying to show you that they have the power to basically, I guess, get rid of you. And if you continue to do the stuff that they don't want you to do or don't like you doing, they is just gonna cause them to get rid of you. And it's just to show you that you don't have to be here. We can kick you out. I know at least 3 kids that dropped out because of them getting suspended so much and them just being tired of getting suspended. Because like I said, if you get suspended, you just get unbothered by it. And basically, I guess you feel like you don't have to be there no more, since they not allowing you to be there when they suspend you.
What are those kids up to now, those 3 kids?
I don't think I could tell you that. They in the streets basically, like doing stuff they not supposed to be doing.
Can you tell me like what kind of stuff they might not?
Things that can lead them to going to jail, basically. It's not safe things.
Carvon is determined not to go down that same path. In fact, he has a long list of colleges that he's considering for next year. But while he's busy looking ahead, it's time we look back to Napoleon. You remember him from the top of the show.
Yeah, he's the gregarious guy who, like so many black students in Missouri, started getting kicked out of school as early as kindergarten. And that's coming up right after this break. When we left off, Napoleon was in prison. The good news, he didn't stay there.
Now, he runs a community program based out of College Hill in North St. Louis called Connections to Success.
Essentially, we provide job readiness, placement and retention services, mentoring, interview-appropriate clothing, transitional employment opportunities through our social enterprises, and policy advocacy.
About half of the people Connections to Success serves are ex-offenders, and Napoleon says most of those people have backgrounds like his.
So, when I first got started in this work nearly 10 years ago, I was very close to my story still at that time. And so my engagement with those that I was serving was more on a social basis. I hadn't learned how to be professional yet. So I would just sit up and kind of what we call just shooting the breeze, you know, we're just talking. And what I found was that many of the individuals that we were serving, story was quite similar to mine. in terms of being suspended or expelled at a very young age. And one individual story sticks out in particular simply because we attended several of the same schools. Now, not at the same time, there's an age difference. However, his experience there was very similar to mine. And it was even some of the same individuals in power that was there when he attended, that was there when I attended. So it really stuck out to me. And essentially what it was this individual was very intelligent. And, you know, he would finish his work before other classmates, and he was not, as skilled at directing his energy in what the teacher or administrators would deem an appropriate manner. So he was identified as a troublemaker. He was identified as a troubled child with a behavioral disorder. And so he was isolated. And it was at this point where he began to internalize this assessment. You're telling me I'm bad. You're telling me I have a behavior problem. So therefore, I'm going to really show you what a behavioral problem is. And so he began to act out. And he began to suppress his intelligence. And he began to suppress his love and interest in certain areas that were not, in his mind, deemed acceptable for someone who had been identified as a bad guy. So he began to play like he was not as smart as he actually was, and that he was a tough guy. And that ultimately led him to begin to run with a crowd that was identified as the tough crowd. It led him into further suspensions and expulsions. And ultimately, it led him to dropping out of high school and ending up in prison. And by the time he came through our doors, he was at a place where he was ready to get back in touch with that little boy, which this particular experience that kind of initiated this took him back to around 8 or 9 years old. So we're talking about a very, very young person.
Yeah, we're talking about maybe like a first, second grader.
Exactly. And it was at this point where the trajectory of his life changed dramatically. Whereas if he would have had the opportunity to be engaged by those who would understand that and had curriculum and strategies and techniques to engage that in a more appropriate manner, they could have harnessed that talent, those skills, that intelligence, and helped to guide him and mentor him, and who knows, you know, what his life trajectory would have been like. But unfortunately, they didn't do that, and he went the road he went. Now, as I encouraged him, it's never too late. I saw the passion in his eye. I recognized the intelligence. I recognized his critical thinking ability, and that individual is now doing well. But unfortunately, there are some things that now follows him that doesn't allow him to totally explore and utilize his gifts, and that's quite unfortunate.
What he's talking about is a legal shadow that can follow you around for life. We did a show about this a couple of months ago, something called collateral consequences. Even minor offenses, let alone prison time, can prevent people from finding jobs. And a criminal record can take away your legal protections for things like housing discrimination.
Napoleon sees all this. He knows all this, all the pitfalls that come with the bad kid label. So you figure he'd be skeptical about if schools will actually change how they hand out school discipline. But his outlook is more nuanced than that, especially when it comes to his own sons.
I mean, when you look at your son, I mean, you, knowing all, everything that you know personally, and then, of course, through your work, I mean, do you worry about him having the same thing just happening to him?
Absolutely, Tim, absolutely. And it's one of those things where you have to allow your children to have their experience and learn, but you also want to be that advocate for them. You want to be that support mechanism. You want to be that guider. And my son, and I have two sons. My oldest son, he is extremely similar to me in that he's an independent thinker. Mm-hmm. He is just as stubborn as he wants to be, and he's going to do it his way. And so much of my guidance and mentorship was taken on from his perspective as controlling his life. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of step back and I kind of allow him to find his way, and you know, he's okay, he's all right. And yes, he's had a few bumps along the way. And I can clearly see that many of those bumps were a direct result of those same institutions that affected me in that way. He was not the traditional sit in the the desk student and listen to the teacher lecture. That's not him. He's got to get up. He's got to be involved. He's got to be doing something with his hands. You got to keep him engaged. And he was segregated. He was suspended. I got the calls every other day. I'm taking off work. I'm meeting with the teachers. I'm talking with the principal. And it's always, you know, my son did this, my son did that. And I never scolded him or disciplined him in a way that would suppress that true him, because I experienced that. So I did not do that. I did not scold him for being himself. What I did was provide him with some tools and insight on better ways to kind of direct his energy. And I mean, he's an awesome young man. And looking at that, that is a fearful thing. You know, mm-hmm. You got a young man and you know he's in the same society you grew up in, and many of those issues and struggles and challenges you had to circumvent, he's faced with them. And so you stay prayed up and you hope for the best, but you also provide him an opportunity and expose him to things that increase the likelihood he'll be successful.
What about your little one?
So the little one, I think he is coming in a time where we're changing the discourse, where that discussion is changing in just a bit, and that's encouraging, because by the time he enters into being exposed to some of these things, there will be extreme differences from when I was at that age, and also when my oldest son was at that age. So I'm encouraged. Now the work isn't done. There's a lot more to do. But I'm encouraged that he'll have a different course, and simply because there's better understanding, because we're having these type of conversations, and he'll be socialized in a different atmosphere.
You know, we're talking about school discipline on this show, but no schools were created just to punish children.
Of course not. And this was something that came up again at that forum with the Nine Network.
Yeah, Karen Hall, she's the superintendent of the Maplewood-Richmond Heights School District. I feel like she really just kind of summed up what's at stake here.
I'm very concerned with the excessive use of discipline. Our students aren't in the classroom learning. And you wonder why, go to vocabulary, there's an achievement gap. There's a correlation there. Who is at the bottom of that gap?
What she's talking about is a difference in academic success between white students and students of color. And who's at the bottom of that gap is almost always black and brown children.
And this is where we're going. Next time on We Live Here, closing that academic gap between black kids and white kids.
Time for some shameless self-promotion.
Yes.
New thing for us.
We like to call this Cheesy Pugs.
Cheesy Pugs.
A.K.A. Cheesy Plugs.
cue the montage of infomercial music, shall we?
Yes.
What do we need to tell people?
So this is so new for us. We don't usually do this.
No.
But hey, if you listen this far, that there's a good chance that you liked what you heard.
Yeah, I think so.
So if you liked us, first, share it with your friends, share it with your mama, share it with your boyfriend or your boo, whoever.
Yeah.
But also go find us on iTunes and rate us. Rate this episode, rate the podcast, because that really helps us out.
Yeah, I feel like we got through that. We're from the Midwest. Both of us are. We don't like asking for things.
We don't, but we're asking.
Yeah, like us on iTunes.
Like us on iTunes. But we're also on SoundCloud and whatever your favorite podcast listening app is.
Yeah. Okay, enough of that. Roll credits, what do you say? Let's
yes.
do it.
Yes.
All right, so We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is our editor, and Margie Fry-Vogel is the editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
Our theme music was composed by Cassie Morgan.
And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.